We bring you local South Dakota music to play you into your weekend. From SDPB, today is Friday, April 4th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we have two, that's right, not one, but two conversations with up-and-coming musical artists. Singer-songwriter Marnie Cook joins us from the Black Hills. She brings her voice and her guitar into our studio. And Plastic Blow, an East River band, ends the show with some punk rock, stick it to the man energy. Plus, Maestro Delta David Geyer from the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra joins us. He shares the story behind Mozart's Great Mass and the unanswered questions that still linger about this unfinished masterpiece. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Ellen Kester, in for Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Ellen Kester. It is SDPB's spring membership drive. If you would like to join the coolest club of supporters out there, now is your chance. It's super easy, I promise. Call or text GIVE to 605-443-6963. That's right. By just sending a text, you can make an impact and support local journalism. Plus, if you're a millennial like me, that means there's no phone call required. You can call or just text 605-443-6963. A single text or phone call supports a whole lot of stories. And we are going to kick off today's show with one such story. Marnie Cook is a singer-songwriter in Rapid City. She joined us for a few live performances in SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio. Cook spoke with SDPB's Lori Walsh about the musicians who made her and the music she makes now.
I have to say, a lot of times just regular life kind of gets in the way of my desire to be a songwriter. I had heard a story about when Bob Seger wrote Night Moves, that he and one of the other guys in the band wrote it in like 15 minutes. And the song you hear on the radio is the song that they wrote.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, that doesn't ever happen. So, you know, the process for me is just really, I wish I could be like Joni Mitchell. You know, all of Joni Mitchell's boyfriends said that they had no relationship with her because she was always writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wish I had time to do that, just to immerse myself in that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, reaching people, I don't know really how to do that. You know, I've got my CD on CD Baby.
And we'll put up a link.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to reach that $10 mark so they'll send me a check. No. I probably made more than that over the last 20 years. But yeah, so I just really have an album of 8 songs and then a single.
Yeah.
And so my goal is always to, you know, try to weed out everything else so I can write, so I can concentrate.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, some of Joni Mitchell is that time and some of it's just attitude.
Very true. Very true.
I want to learn a lot more about your influences and such, but I'm hoping you might play for us right now. Tell us a little bit about this first song.
So this song is the single. It's being sold as a single. It started out, it was like the Edmund Fitzgerald, you know, it had like, you know, 20 verses. And and so I had to cut it down. So it's a song that I had been working on over like many years. And it's a song about, you know, how you sort of have your expectations in life. Women especially, I think, we maybe have our own expectations and the people around us have other expectations, just as women.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like what this song was about. You know, I was 30 or so and I wasn't married and I didn't have children and I didn't really have any prospects, I suppose, and wasn't really interested either. You know, so you just kind of think how your life takes a different path and you just didn't really expect that, you know, not that it's bad or anything, but, you know, your friends are having children and getting married. So that's kind of what this is about. And I guess, I think it's called She Never Minded Her Quiet Time. A lot of my songs have different titles until I find another title. All right. She never minded her quiet time. Is this what life had for her in mind? Moments spent contemplation.
life it seemed was in dreams. Oil lamps burning, pages turning, dreaming on and on. Oh, always drawing the line, never sharing or daring, fearing what she might find, what she might leave behind. Oh, 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 oh. Times a warm wind blowing, tracks of life follow behind, weaving, sometimes lingering, always traveling on. Oh, traveling on, traveling on.
Marty Cook on SDPB's In the Moment for a little moment in sound today from the Black Hills studio at SDPB. I love that song. I just want to just be in that space for a while longer.
Well, thank you.
You, like I, grew up listening to your parents' record albums. Mm-hmm. Tell me, and some kids these days might not remember.
Yeah, it was kind of an eclectic mix, and so we had Gregorian chants, and we had some CCR.
Yeah. Simon and Garfunkel.
Simon and Garfunkel, yeah. of course. Yeah. And there was another one I had mentioned in there.
Yeah, Joni Mitchell, Mary Travers. Joni
Mitchell,
women,
yeah. Bunch of
Crosby,
those,
Stills,
yeah.
And Nash. And then this really Custer Died for Your Sins album.
Yes, yes.
Which I didn't know was an album. What?
Yes, yes. That came out, and I was in like first or second grade when that came out.
Okay, so it's a book.
It's a book, and the album is kind of, you know, based on some of the ideas.
Okay.
You know, and...
And so this is...
Subject matter.
Yeah,
subject
when you're
matter
starting
is
to learn about music that can have a message. Pete Seeger, a Peter, Paul, and Mary, a Simon,
yes,
and Garfunkel. You're,
yes,
hearing the lyrics.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah, because like Pete
to
Seeger's,
yeah,
Little Boxes isn't about little boxes.
Right.
You know, colored,
yeah,
little boxes, which is kind of what, you know, a little kid who's four is kind of thinking that's what that's about. But
right. You're going to draw that
tell
with your crayons. And then you immediately realize this is not a song about boxes.
Yes.
Yeah. See,
yes.
My dad had a lot of Kingston Trio.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember thinking that was just the weirdest sound. And the most wonderful sound. And then, you know, my brother and I would like act out. You know, you'd put the record on and then you'd play. And then you'd act out with pillows. You know, you'd be making something or building something. And then you would start listening to the words and you'd be like, what does that
mean? Exactly.
What's going on here?
Exactly. Like, what was John Fogerty saying when he was saying, I ain't no senator's son? You know, what,
right,
do you mean by that?
Yes. What exactly is going on here? So how do you, when you write, think about lyrics and their importance and, you know, really having something to say in songwriting?
That probably is the biggest thing, because I'm always thinking of, like, one of the best examples, I think, is Every Breath You Take from The Police.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that song is actually not a love song. And it's like the number one wedding song or something. But it's actually about a stalker, you know?
Yeah, I'll be watching you. Yeah.
Yes, and Every Breath You Take. And so when you finally understand what it's really about, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing, because, you know, I was in... The Police were, like, one of the biggest groups when I was in school. And so, you know, it's just really the ability to write that way, I think, without,
yeah,
beating people over the head with what you're saying.
Right.
You know.
I saw Sting play that in concert.
Oh.
And... To your point, like, the crowd is wild for it, and they're like singing it to each other, and I just felt so deeply uncomfortable. I'm like, does nobody else? And I think the truth is, everybody at this point is aware of that. They just love the song still.
Yes.
So the song is that powerful to the,
yes,
point where it's just part of their lives.
Exactly. That it actually their prom maybe has night. A different yeah. And it comes back to that thing where, you know, artists are always talking about how they want the listener to have their own interpretation, perhaps. Or right. Some artists say that anyway. Others say,
yeah,
you know,
you own it. Yeah, you own it now. Yeah. You've been through a lot of radio, you know, through your work on the radio over the years. Yeah. You've seen a lot of changes in how radio comes to people. How does that affect you as a, you know, here we are in public radio, which is a very different space that we've carved out for local musicians to come and perform and share, you know, their work. It's a pretty rare thing, I think, as a public radio person. What are some of the ways that you saw radio change that are impacting artists?
In many ways, I think SDPB or public broadcasting is like the way radio used to be, you know, before it got niche and monopolized and, you know, you've got only a few owners in a town as opposed to, you know, if you've got 12 radio stations in a town, you actually had 12 different owners.
Right.
Well, you probably didn't have that many radio stations in those days, though. It's probably more difficult. Of course, there's the internet, which makes it easier probably for a lot of people, you know, if you know how to use all the equipment and record yourself. And I think there's many ways you can. Well, we've got, you know, lots of instances of people being able to share their music and actually have a very good living just by creating a persona on the internet.
Well, I'll take it as a big compliment to say, because that's what we're trying to do. A little bit of radio here, the way it used to be.
Well, and public broadcasting. That's right. Public broadcasting still serves local. You're probably the only, really, that serves local. And that's unfortunate when you think about all of the bandwidth that's being used up.
Right, yeah.
And how people aren't being served, really, you know.
Well, thank you for that. Another song? You have one more you'd like to play for
us? You bet. This one is actually, this one's about the Missouri River. You know, its importance to the Lakota people. And when I play this song, this is my mother's favorite song. And when I play this in public, I usually talk about how the Black Hills is where all the Lakota creation stories are born, you know. Wind from Wind Cave, and then everything from the Black Hills, of course, flows out to the Missouri. I remember cotton floating by, like slow motion through the sky. Loneliness makes me that way. The Columbia was cold year-round. Since I got back to town, see all you guys think the same. Barbed wire for miles and miles. Clapboard shacks and roadhouse smiles. Where would I go? Missouri welcomed me back home with the mud between my toes, electric poles for miles and miles. Don't wanna be like those trees rising from the muddy deep. Life's so long living that way. Thank you.
Jackson Roadhouse Mine. Where would I go with you down the road a ways? On and on together now. War, Missouri, you wash over me. Together now.
Marnie, thank you so much for playing for us.
Well, thank you very much.
Where can people check out your work and see you in person in the future?
You know what? I'm going to be playing at the Zonta Fest in Custer. That's coming up, I think, on June 7th. And then I will be at the Hot Springs Arts Festival.
Oh, great.
That is back. I know it's been back, but, you know, it seems like since COVID, they've kind of had a hard time. Yeah, so...
Everything just seems in this little time, this COVID time warp that we're still processing.
It's very true, very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, I think you can find all of my stuff on Spotify. And, yeah. And, of course, you can contact me as well.
That's singer-songwriter Marnie Cook. There's more music after the break. Maestro Delta David Geyer previews the next South Dakota Symphony Orchestra concert. We'll talk about a great mass by a great composer. Call or text GIVE to 605-443-6963 to support your local radio. Our airwaves provide a home for South Dakota musicians, artists, and arts organizations. To support our work, call or text 605-443-6963. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Ellen Kester. One of my favorite things about public radio is learning something new. Every hour, nay, every minute, you get some new tidbit to store away in your brain box. These facts are perfect for dinner table conversations and are fun at parties. Call or text GIVE to 605-443-6963. Become a member and support local fun facts, local radio, and local journalism. Right now, through the power of public media, you're going to learn something new about Mozart and about a Saturday night of symphony at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. On April 5th, the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra, its chorus and four soloists, will tackle three pieces, including Mozart's Great Mass. Maestro Delta David Geyer is the music director of the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. He joined Lori Walsh in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls with a preview.
This is a very un-Geyer program coming up. I was thinking about this subscriber that we had during my early tenure here who said something to the effect that they were going down to Sioux City to hear a concert, and she was really glad that all the composers were dead. So this, you know, that this is a program like that. Then the reason for that is that the first half of the program is conducted by our symphony chorus director, Timothy Campbell. And this, you know, just wanted to give him the opportunity to shine. He's an amazing musician and has done incredible work with the chorus. And so he's doing two pieces, one by Bach, one by Mendelssohn, on the first half. It's all about the chorus. Yeah. This is our choral feature for the year. So it's an opportunity to come and relish in beauty and magnificence. I mean, we start with the Bach cantata, and, you know, both of the pieces on the first half are just wonderful, wonderful pieces of music, masterpieces in their own right, even though they're all both, you know, 15 minutes each or so. And then we get to the second half, which is the Mozart great C minor mass. Great has been attached to it, but it is, in fact, great. Like the Requiem, it's unfinished. So there seems to be something about the, in Mozart's case, the the weight of the work and the fact that it doesn't get finished.
Yeah.
But
when would he have written this? What part of his life?
Well, I think it's 1783. So it's not, he's already living in Vienna, but it's not the end of his life, like the Requiem is. And it's a bit of a conundrum as to, you know, why he composed this mass. It was not a commission. Mm. It was first performed in Salzburg, where he was from, but they did not commission it, and it was not performed in the cathedral for various reasons. One of the reasons it was not performed in the cathedral, in the fragmentary state that it was in, was because he wrote the soprano arias for his wife, Constanza, mm-hmm. who must have been one heck of a soprano.
because they're difficult to pull off.
Oh my gosh, it's just the pyrotechnics. It's really, really quite something.
Yeah.
The virtuosity required of it is one thing, but the reason that it was not performed in the cathedral was because she was a woman. And at that time, women were not allowed to sing during the mass.
Okay.
So the choir was all men and boys.
So does that answer the question about why he wrote it and that not being commissioned?
No, it doesn't answer the question because he was in very much in need of money. And
it's
letters,
a radical act of composition.
It, in a sense, I mean, there are letters to his father that he felt compelled
yeah.
to write this.
Artists write things without money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially if you have her in your ear.
Right, right. But there's so much more than just the soprano arias. There's a depth
yeah.
to this piece, a spiritual depth, I would say, to this piece that, I mean, I've come to love it more than the Requiem.
Really?
Yes, I have. I mean, it's considered one of his great masterpieces. And great can also mean large, right? Because we've got about an hour's worth of music. And if he'd completed it, it would have been at least 90 minutes. And now this was intended to be used in a church service.
Okay.
So this
they weren't church services. Spoiler alert: were not an hour back then.
True.
Necessarily, right?
True.
So
yeah.
we don't know how long it would have gone on.
That's right. That's right. But you know, like there's no Agnus Dei. There's no Dona Nobis Pacem. There's not even a Crucifixus or a Resurrexit. You know, I mean, these are big, big parts of the Mass because you're basically setting the entire creed
okay.
to music.
So where does he stop? Does he go from beginning to and stop here?
Well, we have the complete Kyrie.
I don't know the liturgy. So
well,
help us
so
understand
you know,
that,
Lord
yeah.
have mercy, Christ have mercy.
Okay, and that
this
would be at
the
beginning.
That's
okay.
the beginning one, and then you have the Gloria in Excelsis Deo,
okay.
and this is the second part. And we have those two where things are complete.
Okay.
After that, we have sketches and fragments.
And are those performed?
Well,
sketches and fragments.
There are multiple completions of this. And some people have gone so far as to write those extra movements that for which nothing exists.
Okay.
You know, by taking pieces from other Mozart masses, earlier Mozart masses, and
sure.
and filling it out.
So what completion are you choosing for this
well,
performance?
The most recent one, the scholar's name is Leisinger, Ulrich Leisinger. It's published by Baron-Reiter, which is arguably the most authoritative publisher of this Germanic music. So, I mean, honestly, just deciding which completion or partial completion to do is a scholarly act in itself. And
right.
I can't say that I went too deep in it. And I didn't go like into Giants in the Earth, you know, into this. I can't do that for every single program.
Right.
But it's very faithful to what we know to have existed. And it's a very satisfying listen, even though it ends with the Benedictus, which is, it's not the ending of the Mass.
Okay.
Blessed is he who comes in the name
so
of the Lord.
So how are we to leave the auditorium?
Well, satisfied musically, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, it ends beautifully and powerfully. There's no question.
But yet we're wondering.
Yeah, for those of us who are familiar with what masses should be, could be, would be, yeah, it's like, oh man, what would he have written? What would he have written? You know, like, because like I say, I see so much depth.
Maturity. If he'd had the funding, what would we have?
Yeah, let's not go too deep into that question.
You were saying you see a maturity. Go ahead.
I do.
Back to that. Yeah.
I do. We have other masses of Mozart's in C major, and this is C minor. So, you know, you start off with the text, Lord have mercy. Like, what does that sound like? And, you know, there's like the coronation mass of Mozart. It's kind of light and fluffy, you know, and how do you petition God to have mercy in a light and fluffy kind of way? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. This piece, it's not like self-flagellation, Lord have mercy. It's not that at all. It feels like that opening line of the soprano just stretches across the universe in a sort of existential cry of humanity, you know. And then you know that's the Kyrie eleison, the Lord have mercy, and then the middle section is Christ have mercy, and that turns to major, and the soprano comes in, and it is just reflective, personal, I would say, self-assured of the mercy of Christ, because of Christ's humanity, God mm-hmm. becoming man in Christ, mm-hmm. you know, in order to redeem us. I mean, I hear all of that there. I hear a connection between that Christ have mercy with the soprano and possibly the most incredible movement of the work is another soprano aria, the Et Incarnatus Est, which means, and he was incarnated, made man by the Holy Spirit through the Virgin Mary. That's the text that's set. And it's so deeply affecting you. It's impossible to listen to the soprano aria, even if you have no idea what the text is, and not be profoundly affected. It's so beautiful, so intimate. It's amazing.
Who is your soprano?
Well, who do you think? Hannah Celeste Liu.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, Hannah's been here so many times. She's such an audience favorite. But when we do these particularly Baroque and classical works, it's hard for me to imagine a better voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's this crystal clarity that she has in her voice that brings so much. And the emotion that she brings to the text. When she sings Messiah, it's like nobody's business. Like it's like she's giving her personal testimony or something. It just resounds with genuine faith. It's quite beautiful.
The concert is this Saturday. That's April 5th at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. It kicks off at 7:30 p.m. local time. Our guest has been Maestro Delta David Geyer, music director of the SDSO. Up next, we'll feature a local South Dakota music group. Plastic Blow steps into our studio. And hey, if you like what you're hearing, become an SDPB member today. You can do that by calling 605-443-6963. You can also text GIVE to that number. Again, it is 605-443-6963. You're on listener supported SDPB.
Cigarettes have occupied the roads. To the windshield, apathy's got the best of your youth. Again, again, and again, you're missing out on what you thought was fun. Fantasies unnumbed you, tried to get far.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Ari Youngeman, in for Lori Walsh. Let's meet a few more local musicians. Plastic Blow is a DIY alternative rock band from Sioux Falls. You just heard their song, Climbing the Corporate Ladder. Several of the band joined in the SDPB Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls for a conversation with Lori Walsh ahead of their album release. We have bassist and vocalist Stacy Soderstrom, drummer Jackson Ashlock and guitarist and vocalist Jacob Lemmy. We start with Jacob.
Plastic Blow kind of started off as a solo project of mine in like 2021. Okay. But then I wanted to do a band for the longest time with this. And thankfully, like, a lot of this just kind of fell into place. I mean, I reached out to Jackson if he wanted to play drums. I've always wanted to do songwriting with Stacy as well. And it had been a blast ever since we started doing it. And everything just kind of like came into place where like we just kind of like formed a band. And then like we had our buddy Mason, who's not with us right now, but the people that I'm working with right now, I'm eternally grateful with everything, how it's been going. And I keep saying it, and I just hope to have the momentum to continue to go.
Yeah. It's been so fun. We started playing together at Our Savior's. His dad's a pastor at that church, actually. We kind of joke that we're what do we say?
Like a Christian rock band.
Yeah, we joke that we're a Christian rock band, but we're not actually. But we started playing together, though, because during the pandemic, or, well, a little after it, we were both playing music together during the services in the morning on Sundays, and then when they were still kind of doing a lot of virtual services and recording a lot of them. And then we'd just be like, oh, what are you doing after church? And then we'd go and play music together after that, and then Lemmy asked me to be in the band. So.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of places. I mean, shout out to the church bands.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's not a lot of places to play weekly, you know, to be, if the kind of person want to be performing and rehearsing and have an audience every single week, you know, sometimes the praise band is where it's at.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the project then.
So, Plastic Blow. The name itself, I always love like bringing it up because like I get so many like different reactions to everybody when I mention Plastic Blow.
They're always like, oh.
I did not know walking in what it was about. I just kind of like the name.
I mean, again, I was like trying to think of a name where it was like that could stick out with me, and all of a sudden, like, I was just like watching like an Andy Warhol documentary with the Velvet Underground. Their first gigs were part of Andy Warhol's little art exhibition shows called The Exploding Plastic Inevitable. Mm. And then, like, somehow, like, in my brain, it was just, like, connecting two and two together. It's like, Plastic Blow. Whoa! Okay, hold up.
And I was like, sounds good.
Okay,
Lou Reed would be happy with you. That's all we have to say about that.
And then I had a look on Spotify. It's like, who took it? Who took it? Someone must have taken it. And thankfully, no one had that idea. So I was like, yes, I'm doing this.
Yeah. What did you get together first and say, like, what kind of, you know, music do you want to make? How much of this is, you know, knowing each other and just making music, and how much of it is this, we want to do this, we want to do that, this is the sound we want, this is the...
Maybe, I don't know, did both of you start writing
Lemmy,
songs first?
Lemmy wrote the majority of this album. Okay. Lemmy's, I'm just so amazed by Lemmy's writing skills.
Me too.
Yeah, Lemmy, Lemmy can, like, it's wild. He can write a whole album in less than a night. It's pretty crazy. So Lemmy had given us the outline a lot of this album already. And then when we first got together, we would just get together and we would play covers, and then Lemmy would show us some of the songs that he wrote. And then sometimes him and I and our other bandmate Mason, Jackson hadn't came in just yet, but we would get together and because he was finishing up his undergrad.
Yes.
So we would kind of get together and write songs and then play songs. And then we were like, oh, we should do this. And then Lemmy had already had this wonderful album just pretty much already fleshed out, because he had already had his solo project as well. And we really wanted to be able to add just all of those different musical lines and those live elements to some of the songs that he had already written too.
So when you're writing, are you hearing in your head these people?
Yes.
Are you hearing the music in your head and then they show up and it's different?
Yeah. No.
Well, both?
It's both.
Okay, so you said yes to both.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of it is like what I do at work. I mean, like, I work as a lift operator over at Furniture Mart, and I get to listen to music with one earbud in. I listen to full-length albums, like, whenever, wherever.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my writing process comes from, like, what album I'm listening to at the time. It just kind of becomes, like, a free form of consciousness. It's like, okay, can I write something similar to this? But how can I put my own twist onto it? And I've been doing this for like almost 20 years. I didn't start recording until like freshman year of high school with like acoustic guitar demos, and I recorded it on a 3DS. a lot of it was like a lot of practicing, trying to like figure out like how to make a song like stand out, just what makes a song good just in general. And I've been kind of studying that ever since, as long as I can remember.
Yeah. Jackson, what makes a song good for you?
I think it's up to the interpreter. I think if you're thinking about the other instruments that you're playing with and what they want to do, well, I mean, you can take it so many different ways. I mean, one person could have the idea, and then you kind of go with that idea. It's always good to have, sometimes to have less cooks in the kitchen. But I think it's up to the interpreter. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I think it's really interesting what you say about, you know, it's up to the interpreter. You know, every person, they have their own ideas and histories and stories when they listen to music. Yeah. Like for me, when I listen to music, I really like collaborative efforts. I really like music that has a message behind it. I grew up going to, I grew up going to a lot of punk shows when I was younger. A lot of the shows that I went to in Rapid City with my older sisters and the bands that my older sisters would show me, a lot of them were musicians and bands that had a very distinct message in them. A lot of the times it was things related mm-hmm. to what was going on in the world at the time, mm-hmm. things that are just very personal. And that's the kind of music that I like to listen to. I think that's something that I really like about Lemmy's writing and the things that I like about when we write together. We actually just wrote a song together and we played it for the first time, all of mm-hmm. us, last weekend at our music video show. And it was just things that are personal and things about that are kind of, you know, the difficult things in life. But I think it makes it a little bit easier when you get to hear people talk about it and sing about it and write about it, and mm-hmm. makes you feel like you're not alone in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. That's where I was going to like lead up to too as well. Just like eventually in my songwriting process, like I wanted to like, I kind of thrive on like having it be like a collaborative effort. I bring ideas and just kind of like show them to the band. I say it a lot too. I mean, like even like on my downtime, I just write music myself. Like whenever I show them stuff, I also encourage them to like bring their own style or like have like mm-hmm. share like their ideas with me. It's like to make something yeah. that like can like go just far beyond past, just something that's bigger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like the great part about this band so far for me has been working with you guys. You guys are very open and very kind and warm-hearted and makes me feel very comfortable. So it really helps me play and makes it better and makes it more fun when people are listening, and I have more fun doing it too. That way I'm more open. So it's great.
Yeah.
I love this band.
I feel like everybody comes kind of maybe from, Lemmy and I maybe have a little bit closer like stylistic playing styles maybe. Or
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas like we all kind of have like different music tastes, mm-hmm. I would say. And we all bring a different influence. Like Mason, our guitarist, he is like a wonderful like metal style guitar mm-hmm. player. Very exact, can play all of those really crazy fast trills. And that's not necessarily the things that I listen to or can play. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just fun seeing all the different elements we can bring to it. Yeah.
We add in little spices.
When did you pick up the bass?
The first time I ever picked up the bass was when I was in high school. There's been a big break. So when I was in high school, my good friend Lane Putnam, you've probably, yep, yeah. Sure. Yep. And she lives out in California now, and she's a wonderful, she's making it, I think she's making it big out there. Yeah. Yeah, she asked me to play for her at our high school talent show on a song that she wrote. And then along with my best friend, Maya Van Nuys, mm-hmm. she's a wonderful violinist. And and that's when I first picked up the bass. And then I didn't play the bass until, when was it you gave me your bass, Lemmy?
That was like 2022.
Yeah, then in 2022, Lemmy asked me if I wanted to be in the band, and then I was like, "Yeah, I kind of want to play bass." And then I was like, "Oh, but I don't have one." And then Lemmy was like, "Oh, here, I have one. You can use this." And
yeah,
and so it's kind. Just it, yeah, it's just so kind and just so lovely. And I've been a musician since I was I started singing in choir when I was in elementary school. I was in the Rapid City Children's Choir when I was younger, and then growing up I started playing guitar with my friend Maya Van Nuys and her family, and they taught me how to play guitar. Mm. And but I hadn't really been in my own band ever until my late 20s, and that's kind of a theme, I think, with a lot of women. Sometimes they don't typically get into, at least in like alternative rock scenes or like DIY scenes, a lot of them don't get into the bands until they're in their later 20s. But yeah, so it just feels nice to be able to be in a part of that. And it was just so great to
elementary school, community choirs, church choirs.
Yeah.
Like we are teaching our kids music.
Yeah.
And then when you grow up, you might do something entirely different with it and find each other. But that education, that foundation of music education matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, 100%.
Absolutely.
And that's something that like we really appreciate about, you know, being able to play at places like Total Drag. They're all ages venues. And, you know, that's what we all grew up going to and playing at. We're all ages venues. And
Tell me about this album.
I consider it a proper debut album for like this project. I mean, I had like a little like mixtape that I wrote back in 2023 with like some of the songs that were like more electronic based. This next album is called Porcelain Figures. And some of it has like recreations of songs that were on that mixtape. Half of it, it's also like original new stuff as well. I consider it like my homage to like 90s noise rock, like just really anything alternative is like just kind of free spirit, reckless abandon kind of thing. I think it shows on the album too as well, because like we recorded the whole thing in my parents' garage when it was 93 degrees out like last July.
Will Behringer, it was so awesome and came with all of his recording equipment, and he was the guy who helped us mix and master and record for us. And yeah, we did this all in Lemmy's, Jacob's, parents' garage, and we were sweating our guts out.
So, I mean, like, I think it added more character to what the final product was. It's all of us, like, how I envisioned it all along with, like, with friends, a good band. Something that, like, you can listen to. It's just free spirit rock and roll.
Yeah, and just in the spirit of DIY, too. You know, we recorded this by ourselves with our friend who's also from here in the music scene. And, yeah, just knowing, like, you can do it yourself. Anybody can do this. And anybody can be a part of the music scene. And,
What's the physical experience? You know, you mentioned being in the garage, sweating it out. You as a drummer.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I think part of it is also loving each other. I think it keeps me coming back too.
See, that would have been a better question.
And just just the good times. I think another good part about this album as well is because we had such a good time, and I think people will feel that when they listen to it too.
I
so appreciate Lemmy's songwriting and lyrics.
And
I think it really touches like just to the heart of like the deep struggles that we all go through daily living in this really difficult time and this really difficult world. And I really enjoy Lemmy's lyrics a lot in this album. I think it speaks to the heart and to the mind and body and soul.
A lot of my lyrics in this album are a lot about perseverance and being resilient. I try not to like go overboard with it, make it like some millennial core kind of $20 burger music, like you got a fire in our soul. But I mean, it really is like kind of personal to me because as like we were kind of like talking about briefly earlier, it was during the pandemic, like I kind of like hit a low point with myself just mentally and physically. And just kind of with like everything that was going on at that time, I mean, I felt extremely hopeless. The only thing I could really turn to was like music. I also confide at my parents just about like what everything was going on, trying to like make sense of the world. And just, I realized I have friends and family just around me, and it's like it helped me empower myself to kind of say like, hey, I'm not going to live like this. I am going to continue to like be the best version that like I can envision myself seeing. And if it means shouting into a microphone, then so be it. And then like everything else just kind of fell into place, like I said. And I think a lot of it was I knew I wanted to do this. I was like praying, manifesting it, meditating on it.
And I think that it's just so beautiful, like in the way that like you put it and like the way that you and so many other people help you know, move through those emotions and through those really difficult moments in life. I've also struggled through some of that too. And, you know, in Rapid City, again, you know, with the DIY punk rock scene out there, that was just such a safe haven for so many kids. When I first moved out here to Sioux Falls and I went to Augie, I kind of felt like a little bit of an outcast, a little bit of a weirdo sometimes. And then I heard about this place called Total Drag. And then that's where I met my people, met my family. And I haven't left since. Yeah. And so it's just, I think that a lot of these DIY music scenes, they're life-saving to people. And that's why they need to exist and need to stay around and why we all have to support them. And so getting to be a part of this experience with these guys has just been really, just a full circle moment for me.
Tell them that my demons couldn't hold me down. Saw the flame and it was dimming, so I got myself up and I better pass down.
That was Plastic Blow's song, Keto Friendly Diet. Plastic Blow will release their album on Saturday, May 17th, and will be playing an album release show at Total Drag Records in Sioux Falls with guest band Diaphane. If you like hearing local musicians and artists from across the state and emerging performers on SDPB, please let us know. This week is our spring membership drive. My co-producer, Ellen Kester, joins me now as we continue to pull back the curtain on how we produce and bring you the local stories you hear on public radio. Ellen, we kicked off today's show with Marnie Cook. Share with us a little bit about how this musician came to you.
Yes, so there is an amazing program called the Emerging Performing Artists Program out in the Black Hills. It is done through the Dahl Arts Center. And we have been in contact with the coordinator of that program, that is the amazing Deb Lux. And basically every week I've been texting her and saying like, hey, well, who's an artist who is up and coming in the Black Hills who we should know about and should, you know, host on our airwaves?
And who have we gotten so far?
We've gotten Marnie Cook, who you heard earlier in the hour. If you missed that performance, go listen to our podcast because she is amazing and she has these amazing introductions to her songs where she just tells us a story about where the song comes from, and she's fantastic.
One of the unique and lasting legacies of public radio and SDPB is our partnerships throughout the state with arts and music organizations. Our second story came to the air because of the long-standing relationship with the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra.
Yes, we typically have the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra on our program on Fridays before their concert, which is Saturday, so tomorrow. You can hear Mozart at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. Maestro Delta David Geyer usually comes in on Wednesdays and just shares his extensive knowledge on classical composers, classical music. And every single time he comes in, I learn something new. Today, he talked about Mozart and this mass that Mozart wrote that was not commissioned. He just like wrote that thing and nobody really knows why. And he didn't complete it. And nobody really knows why there. We just know that he wrote it for his wife because she was a soprano. And the mass was made for a really good soprano. But because she was a woman, she couldn't sing it in church. So the mass could not be performed in a church.
Interesting.
Yes.
Leaving us with more questions.
More questions.
One of the things that I find really neat about In the Moment is our ability to highlight both established and emerging artists. So I heard about Plastic Blow from a colleague at SDPB. We knew Jacob Lemmy from another music project that he was part of at SDPB last summer. And it was really fun to be able to check out his new music and hear Plastic Blow's new album. And to also get to share the conversation and music with all of you. You can support more local stories and music with a donation to SDPB today. Online at sdpb.org or by calling 605-443-6963. That's our show for today. We hope it served you. In the Moment is hosted by Lori Walsh and produced by Ellen Kester and me, Ari Youngman. From all of us at SDPB, thank you for listening.